It's gotta be difficult, man. Come on.
Okay. All right. Let's be serious.
It always gotta be damn difficult.
I gotta be serious.
Let me make sure my shirt is in the frame. My Rolling Stones. Man, shirt fire, man. You don't know nothing about Rolling Stones. Mick Jagger and them. My people.
Yeah, that is your people. You're absolutely 100%.
Right. 100%. Okay, this is a test. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to welcome you all back to another episode of Black Law and Legal Lies.
I thought this was a test.
A test had been done. Whoa, shit. You need to say a test or something again?
I thought this was a test.
Cool. Bet.
We're not testing. We're going forward.
Oh.
The way it is.
Things will never be the same.
We're not testing anymore. Things are the way that they are. Say something else. Why don't you? I don't like to talk a lot because I don't know what to say when I'm on the spot.
Think about it.
Just I'm not a words. Player. I just crush a lot.
Is that what you are?
Hot and bubbly. Don't stop. Get it, get it.
Ladies and gentlemen, a little behind the scenes, if you will.
Wait, what?
Real 10 seconds now.
What? Nasty.
I'm just mimicking my shirt.
Anyway.
Welcome back to another episode of Black Law and Legal Lies, where we specialize this year in committing to you to tell the truth to you. This is actually the first episode of 2020, believe it or not. Not the first one that you've heard, but the first one that we've recorded.
You know what?
In 2020.
You're stupid again.
I'm stupid. I'm letting the people...
When... We committed
to tell
we
you the
always
truth.
Are committed to. Well, let me say that Beck and myself, we are committed to telling the truth. Always.
Sure.
We've always done it. We always will.
True that.
Correct.
With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Dan. You can keep up with me on Twitter and on IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. Mm-hmm. Keep up with the show across all social media platforms at Black Law Podcast. Don't forget merch in the store, blacklawpodcast.com/shop. And I think that's it. I am Dan on Drugs on IG and Twitter.
Wow. You said that already.
That's but, because he is on drugs.
I can't, dispute that fact. But my name is Afro Becky.
Becky.
Yay.
And I am also joined by...
Retarded titties, titties.
Really? We still calling her that?
It's 2020. Shit, she needed a new nickname.
Wait, that's not new, that's old.
It's old, but I mean, you got...
You're bringing it into the 2020s.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is just Dan, and you can follow me at ITellLegalLies on Twitter. And it's great to be back. He's kind of rusty. Feeling kind of... different.
Yeah, and just like I was explaining before we hit record, it's like I'm a little rusty, so when I gotta be telling y'all ladies out here, look, this has never happened to me before.
It has.
It really has, but I say that because I don't want you to think it's you. It's me.
Yeah, it's always you. You're absolutely right.
Nah, for real, dudes be doing that shit. Dudes be like, this ain't never happened to me before, and don't get drunk. Don't get drunk. A drunk dude, I'm telling you, see, we're already going down a rabbit hole.
That's false.
Cause a drunk dude? Like, drunk, pissy drunk.
Well, see, you didn't say that. You said pissy, don't get drunk.
No, pissy drunk. Like,
see, I don't do pissy drunk, so.
Man.
I would know.
Pissy drunk? Mm-mm. Shit ain't working.
Oh, look. My glasses.
They seen you in glasses before.
I don't think so.
Yeah, last when? Episode.
Really?
Well, the last episode that they saw, yeah.
Had my glasses?
Yeah, because that was recorded the last weekend in December.
I may have had my glasses, but look, my glasses, they're back.
Look, y'all, I'm skinny.
Psych.
Shh. Look, y'all can see for yourself. Look at what? That. Look at that. Look at that. The boy been hitting the gym. Look at that. Look at that. Look at that. Ah, that shit hurt.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
You rusty.
Do we have a topic today?
We do.
Me?
We do. Okay. No. Right. We have a real topic. See, you said that you were about telling the truth.
Okay.
And you just lied about 10 times.
Shit, about what?
In the opening. But about anyway. What?
What the hell I lie about? I'm much. Y'all, videos on YouTube. I am thinner than the last time you guys saw me. Videos not, on YouTube.
That wasn't a lie. But anyway, so.
Fuck it's a lie. My dick ain't rusty either.
Oh, Jesus.
Topic.
Anyway, we've discussed before when we did the show, we mentioned Loving versus Virginia. Remember yes. those shows yes. we talked about?
Racial integrity.
Right. And in that show, we actually discussed archaic laws mm-hmm. that had to do with race. And believe it or not, 2020, Loving is still in the books in Virginia. And there are also some laws in Virginia.
Wait, so the Racial Integrity Act is still well, on the books?
In a couple of forms. Because there are still laws on the books that make it illegal for black and white children to play on the same playground, to ride on the same train cars, to use the same schools, the same hospitals, and there are several other things. But yeah,
in 2020, there's something on in legislation saying that black and white kids cannot go to the same hospital.
Right. Same hospitals, playgrounds, and schools, and they are still on the books.
So technically, that's an enforceable law then, right?
No.
I mean, it violates the Civil Rights right. Act.
So it's not enforceable. It has no power, has no weight, but it's still there.
Hmm.
So what's the purpose of it being there, and how can it get removed?
Exactly. So there are... I believe there are several initiatives.
There's something else. I want to say this before I lose my train of thought. Something recently just happened where they voted on something. And I'm assuming that's how you get it taken off the books is you
constitutional amendments, things like that.
Something recently just happened where it was a no-brainer where everybody voted, Republican, Democrat, Independent, everybody voted except for like one or two people. And you're like,
what was it? What was it about?
It was like a month ago. It was in January. And I forget what it was, but everyone was scratching their heads like,
why was this still here?
Why? Yeah. And it was something with either Black history or Martin Luther King or some shit. I don't know.
But there's a lot of, and that's basically what we're talking about today. There are, believe it or not, across the country, laws on the books. In many states, and I'm not just talking a few, all 50 that actually impact black and brown people still left over from Jim Crow and prior. And one of the things that I want to talk about are restrictive covenants. So if you don't know what a covenant is, anybody?
Okay, yeah, I'll take a stab at it. Or would you like to go first, Becky?
I'm going to say, yes, I would like to take a stab at it.
All right. Let's
Had
go.
To answer the direct question. Anyway, my guess is that a covenant is an agreement that people choose to live by or choose to adhere to in a certain area.
Mine is basically I'm covered in the blood of Christ. And I have a covenant now with Christ because I am covered in his blood.
Right. So a covenant, as Beck said, is an agreement. Right.
Well, you can have a covenant with Christ too.
Right. We
you?
Do have, as Christians, we have a covenant.
Okay.
We have an agreement between us and God.
Okay.
Right. So covenants are agreements between people, groups of people, individuals. X, Y, and Z. But what we're going to talk about are racially restrictive covenants. So back in the day, and from what I found out in researching, these started in like the 1920s. So racially restrictive covenants were basically the things that kept black people out of certain neighborhoods.
Did this instigate around the same time the Great White Flights started taking effect?
Well,
this, probably as a result of.
This is actually right. So we know that even today, though, you think about it, there are a lot of places where Black people can't afford to buy homes.
Like, now, and I'm not saying this to be funny, but I've had several people over the past couple of months, because of the type of work we do, we're surrounded by, what, a couple hundred people for a few months. And some of them like, yo, where do you live? Where you stay? And I'm like, I stay in this area. And they're like, yo, how the fuck do you afford that? How do you afford? And I'm like, without trying to sound like an asshole and say it really doesn't cost much more, because there's houses in your neighborhood in the city of New Orleans that cost much more than our house. There's houses in Lakeview. There's houses in, but they're like, it's almost like, and I think this is probably a result of what you're talking about as far as trying to keep Black people out, is almost, I don't want to say all, but a lot of Black people think that the area that I live in is super expensive and it's unattainable. They can't live there because they can't afford it, when that's not necessarily the truth, because it's not much more expensive than, I say, your average New Orleans but neighborhood.
You said something about 10 seconds ago that is an offshoot of all of this. It's the perception,
right?
One, and it's the legacy of these racially restrictive covenants. So, and I'm more than sure if you looked at the deeds and the basically how your house was purchased from when it was actually built, to, you would probably find a racially restrictive covenant, because they are on the books, and from what I understand, would be extremely difficult to just totally eradicate out of the language in the sale of a home. So what racially, like I said, they started in 1920s. What they basically did was prevent certain people from owning or even living in certain areas in cities. So, and how I actually came hit on this topic, I was reading something and I had a, I get these little news flashes. And CNN actually had a story about it. And so I started reading it. And after I read CNN's story, I started looking stuff up. And I was like, floppy mother. So I want to read to y'all. So like I said, this started in 1920s.
You know I'm a good reader. Would you like me to read?
I want to read to y'all some of the things that are actually in legal document currently sitting in like conveyance offices in cities, major cities in the United States. So these are some a sentence out of one of these covenants. So it says, said premises shall not be rented, leased, or conveyed to or occupied by any person other than of the white or Caucasian race.
What state is this in?
This was actually in California. This comes
This
comes out of a deed to a house.
Good old progressive California.
In California. That's another one. So I was reading, as I was reading these things, I was like, are y'all serious? So this one says, if persons not of the Caucasian race be kept thereon by a Caucasian occupant, strictly in the capacity of servants or employees of such occupant, such circumstances shall not constitute a violation. So basically, they can't live there, they can't own it, but you can bring them in to clean your house.
Right.
They can't stay, though. They can't live on the premises, can't have a live-in maid, especially if this live-in maid is not Caucasian. Wait. Try this one.
Wait, what about interracial? That well, would fall
that
under?
That was already illegal at that time right?
Wait, we're in the 20s now? Okay.
This is 20s, but they actually had a clause exactly like that. It said, I don't think I downloaded it or printed it out, but this one said something like, mulattoes, Negroes, Negroid, basically anybody who had any percentage of African American blood, anything like that. So they outruled anybody other than someone who was Caucasian in the restrictive covenant. But it's like, so you would think that it would be a simple thing to just say, okay, take it out and forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, restrictive covenants, especially ones that are in deeds, they run with the land. And they are literally, they are legal documents, even though this particular phrase or particular paragraphs in these documents are illegal because of constitutional amendments and not just laws, but cases and everything else. These things, and like I said, you would think, let's just take them out and whatever.
Be done,
but you can't,
with it, right?
But you can't, because these are actually historical documents. One, they're legal documents, too. And in order to get them all basically cut out, you would take time and money, because you would have to find them all. And when you think about the massive amount of paper that you would literally have to go through in every state in the nation, because every state in the nation has something like this.
But isn't that somebody's job to know that this shit exists and where it is, to where you shouldn't have to dig through papers? There should be someone who knows that, okay, we have this, 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 and this.
Well, there are now organizations who make it their jobs to find these things, but it's not like they can find them and take them out. As I said, this all right. takes time and money. So what some states have done, and I think Washington State, all right, so Washington State, Minnesota, and California can actually, when they purchase property that has these restrictive covenants, they can ask the county clerk to attach a modification document. And what that does is basically say that that particular part of the deed is now illegal. Because, you know, when you purchase a home, you do title searches.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm like, wouldn't that kind of come up in the what are you paying the title company for? Other than start seeing if there are any other liens on the property, wouldn't that encompass some of these?
And it does. And that's the thing. It does. And most people who do title searches know that they're there.
But they don't do nothing.
They can't. That's the thing. In order for you to basically take this out of the deed to your home, in order to take it out of the provenance, so to speak, you would actually have to go into court and petition the court to modify this document. So there has been some push to not take everything out, but to attach to these deeds, or, you know, put in the conveyance offices related to these deeds language that basically says, you know, this person that's selling it and this person that's buying it, they I think I have language for that.
Man, all I know is there's what were we watching, Becky, where there were HOA laws against black people moving in?
Mm-hmm.
So we ain't talking state. We ain't talking city. We're not even talking jurisdiction. We're talking HOA, homeowners association laws that say that black people, Hispanic people, basically black minorities cannot live in this neighborhood. Yeah. And that shit, they actually upheld that shit. There was a black family trying to buy a house. This was maybe 2018, 2019.
Yeah, but that is all the evolution of this. That all starts with this.
But the HOA should not be able to supersede state, local, federal laws, though. However, they were able to because it's in their bylaws. But that's discriminatory.
And it is. And it should be against federal law. Because, and that's something else I wanted to point out. Because I said this started in the 1920s. This actually, and why I said it's so prevalent, started in the 20s. Pull it down.
Just about an inch or so.
No.
So far, so good.
Okay. So starting in the 20s, it lasted about 50 years. What makes this even, well, I'm saying it's more troubling, but it's not surprising, is that the federal government actually condoned this because the federal government would not underwrite mortgages on houses that did not have these restrictive covenants in them.
Wow. So is that where the Fair Housing Act started to come into play?
And that's actually what made all of these things illegal. Only then, because even like there was a court case, and I believe the title, I know it had Shelley in it, but as far as the court case was concerned, it made these covenants unenforceable. But even after the court case made it unenforceable, they still continued to put these restrictive covenants in documentation. So then comes the Fair Housing Act, and that actually made even putting these things in the deed illegal. So they went from unenforceable, but y'all can go on and put it in there. Right. You know? And it was, think about it, it's unenforceable right now. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thought.
It's only enforceable when it's convenient for you.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's unenforceable, but we're not going to say it's illegal. Mm. So you can continue to put it in there because somewhere along the line, something might change and it may become enforceable again and we'll have it. So that it actually, like I said, not surprising considering the state that America is in right now and the history as far as race goes. So here comes the Fair Housing Act. And as I said, that made it totally illegal to put these things in there. But you have 50 years worth of these covenants in these documents. And they had a guy, I was reading the article, the CNN article. He's Hispanic. And he purchased a home, I believe it was either North Carolina or can't remember. Wherever you purchased it at, he said, after he started hearing things about this, he went and he looked. And not only does his deed hold the whole you can't sell to anyone but a Caucasian, the language that I read about not having a Caucasian, if you had a Caucasian, it had to be someone who was a servant, that came directly from his deed. So he's like, so I buy this house, didn't steal it, paid good money for it, but I'm sitting in the house and I'm living in a house where 40 years, you know, 50 years, 60 years ago, I could only have been a servant. And then I couldn't even be a living servant. I had to get out of the neighborhood because these covenants said I couldn't even stay here.
So check this out. That reminds me of, well, two things. One is Cory Booker. He told a story about how his parents tried to buy a house somewhere in Jersey, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And their real estate agent was like, no, you can't buy this house. You can't buy it. And they were dead set. Yo, I want to live in this house. And they basically, it was kind of like blocked. Like, no, you can't buy this house.
Mm-hmm.
So, in believing that it was because they were people of color, or one of his parents maybe were people of color,
mm-hmm.
they sent a white friend to go try to make an offer on the same house. And it's like, oh, yeah, come on in, buddy. Come on in. Yeah, look, this is the bathroom. This is the da 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 da. So then while that friend was there at that house, Cory Booker's parents showed up. I was like, oh, for real? I thought this shit wasn't for sale, bro. So what's really going on? So they ended up getting that house. But the other thing this makes me think about is for years, decades, over half a century, they've tried, and when I say they, I hate using that, but
people, you mean the establishment?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They've tried to keep us separated. They tried to keep us out of their neighborhoods. Now, it's no secret that this is true. The higher percentage of minority people that move to your neighborhood, it does lower the property value. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, that's fucked up on so many levels.
But once again, that is a direct result of this, you know,
and people parking on their lines. But I'm just saying.
But no, but everything that we're talking about, the white flight, the lowering of property values, that all stems from things like this.
Right. So with that being said, though, them trying to keep us out of their neighborhoods. And like I said, it's a fact that the higher population, the more black people, the more Hispanic people you have in your neighborhood, the lower the property value, the lower the appeal of your neighborhood becomes. Mm-hmm. But they have been steadily moving into our neighborhoods, right? And kicking us out. Mm-hmm. Like, you're coming into cities like Detroit, like D.C. D.C. is the number one in the entire country, the number one most gentrified city.
I can believe
it. I was reading this article about it, and we saw this shit. Like, what's happening in New Orleans now? We saw this in 2002, mm-hmm. Back in D.C. So mm-hmm. we know what's happening. But you want to keep us separated. We can't live in your neighborhoods. We can't live in your communities. So we live in the inner city on top of each other. But right now, that's the hip thing. That's
to
the,
do, right?
Urban. I want to be urban now.
That is so the millennial thing to do.
I'm going
to
move to Brooklyn. Because, I'm going to move to the Bronx.
Another way of cultural appropriation.
And it
not only that.
I think it's more cultural assimilation.
Assimilation.
Right.
They're trying to assimilate to us?
No. They are basically trying to make us fall in line. Because think about what gentrification does. Gentrification, you go into,
out of there.
Right. You go into a neighborhood because you love the spirit and the culture of this neighborhood. And then you go into this neighborhood and you say, I can add value to this. And then I start moving and I start doing certain things in the neighborhood. And in the end, you totally destroy the vibe of that neighborhood because the people who were there before you got
are
there
no longer
can't
there.
Afford to stay there because so.
But check this too. Two things on that. One, there's this one area back where I'm from the DC area. For those of you who don't know, who don't hear me say that constantly over and over again. We did have our own culture. We still do to an extent. A lot of our culture is actually, believe it or not, it's Southern culture, because people from most of the black people came from the Carolinas, mm-hmm. North and South Carolina.
Yep.
So,
yeah, because, you know, when we made that whole migration, that's where we went. You think about came from the South, went to New York,
D.C., Philly,
Virginia,
Chicago. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's where we
so
went.
So mm-hmm. we had that culture. And there's this one area where they've completely, there's black people do not exist anymore. And this was an all black, 100% black area. The fact, if you ever saw a white person walking through this neighborhood, it was either a cop or someone looking to buy
sound
drugs.
Like uptown.
Basically. So it's like now when you go back, they have all these beautiful murals on the wall that celebrate the culture of that area.
But you
and then
don't
they
see
name
the people.
Streets, they name new schools and new buildings after some of our city leaders. But that's not our culture anymore.
No, but that's a way to keep you quiet. You know, that's a way to say, oh, it's okay. Because look, we're celebrating you. While we've moved into your neighborhood and kicked you out.
Right.
We are celebrating you.
Yo, me and Becky, right? I took Becky back around my old way, back where I used to live. And I was driving down one of the streets and I'm looking at it. Now they got speed humps and they got all kinds of nice shit. People walking their dogs. And I remember telling Becky, I'm like, you would never see white folks walking. And no lie.
I sound like the Lil Nye.
I came up to a speed hump and some white lady was walking with her stroller waiting to cross. No stop sign, no light, no nothing. So bitch, you have to wait for me to move. Cause I think ours is the same as New Orleans. Pedestrians do not have the right of way. So I'm driving and this bitch pushes her fucking baby in front of my car. So I had to slam on brakes and I'm like, and then she looks at me like and keeps on walking. Like,
I know you're not gonna hit me.
The second person I saw, same street, they're just looking at me like,
what are you doing here?
Right, you don't belong here. Right. I spent 23 years of my life here, and you looking at me like I don't belong. So the other thing too is just to kind of wrap up, is one of the dreams of most black people that live in these urban areas pre-gentrification, right, is to own a single family home in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're being forced to do that now. Not necessarily own, but rent or whatever. They're pushing us out.
Because you can no longer afford to live in the inner city. But once again, like I said, and I keep repeating it, and I'm repeating it for a purpose, it all stems from this. Because think about this. If I can't, and you said it, this is the way that most people pass down wealth to their children. People in our culture.
Property.
Property. Mm-hmm. Like, we own a house, we pass it on to our children who pass it on to their children.
Which end up selling it, most likely. But
it still appreciates over time for the most part. Yeah, it
does. But that's how we gain wealth. And we pass it down generationally. Right. If you can't buy a house in a certain area, or you won't buy a house in another area, it's just one way, another way to stop you from achieving. Yeah. And that's basically what a lot of these laws did then. And still, it's still doing, because we are still feeling the effects. Everything that you're saying all stems from this.
This is what's going to happen. And I said this numerous times about DC, right? Where it's to the point where, if you're not familiar with DC, we probably have top three traffic in the nation. It's probably LA and then DC. And a lot of people are in disbelief. They're like, oh, Atlanta's got bad. No, DC traffic is a different animal. But when you're moving these people out of places like Anacostia, there's a lot of historically black neighborhoods and areas where they have a lot of shops, a lot of stores, a lot of fast food joints, a lot of restaurants.
So we're really walk in, huh?
We're the ones that work there. Mm-hmm. We work in these kitchens. We work at these fast food joints. But now you're pushing us out to PG County, Maryland. Now you're pushing us out to Woodbridge, Virginia, where we no longer have access to get to these places. Even in a car, we don't have access to get to these places because it takes 2 hours
to get
each
there.
Way.
Right.
So now we're going to find the same jobs in these towns. So there's going to come a point where you have nobody to work in these areas. And the gentrifiers damn sure ain't going to go work at Burger King. They might work at a Starbucks, but they're not going to work at McDonald's. They're not going to work in the back of a Denny's somewhere. So they're going to end up running the property value up. Like DC right now, the government's moving out of DC. The federal government is leaving.
Because they can't afford. They can't,
the federal government cannot afford. So they're going to Baltimore. They're going to Richmond. Mm-hmm. But what's going to happen is they're driving the cost of living up. And now it's like, okay, we've done enough damage here. We can't even afford it here anymore.
So now
let's go to New Orleans.
That is what they're doing
now. Exactly what they're doing.
Because most of the people that you see that are moving into these urban areas are from up north.
Yeah, or the West Coast.
Exactly right. So
look at that training class we had at our job. We had a training class where new hires get trained. And I just happened to stroll through the parking lot and I'm looking at license plates. California, North Carolina, mm-hmm. DC, mm-hmm. Virginia. Oh, yeah. Like, I want to say 25% of them were from out of state.
Oh, yeah. They are coming. And then the places where they are actually, and we've mentioned this on shows before, the places where they are choosing to live are in the inner city. And you mentioned places where you would not see a white face unless it was a cop or somebody looking to score drugs. I said, that's our Lower Ninth Ward. Well, it's not called the Lower Ninth Ward anymore.
What's it called?
It's now called the Bywater.
Oh, that's the new name?
Wait, so they just extended the Bywater, basically.
It is now called the Bywater. And, you know, the Marigny. So yeah.
It's always been called that, though, right? Well, but they're just extending the...
Well, technically, no.
Cross like, the canal?
Like, the Bywater was like a little bitty piece of something. Now, everything that we, as native New Orleanians, called the Lower Nine, that's what the Lower Ninth Ward, that's what we called it. It is now called the Bywater. Or there's something else that I can't remember the name that.
Where my mama lives, that's not the Bywater.
No.
Mid-City.
Yeah, your mama lives in Mid-City or
Bayou.
St. John Bayou. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, Bayou St. John. You know, so yeah, that those are not the names that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. You know, those are not the places like.
Same with apartment complexes, too. They change the names to these fancy, like. I don't know.
The projects.
Yeah.
Yeah. The projects are no longer what we used to call them. They are now like Magnolia Trace.
Yes, I'm going to tell you, the old Magnolia, the old Calliope, that shit scared me. And I'm from the hood. And I'd be the Lafitte. They did tear down the Lafitte.
Yeah, they did.
So I'd be rolling through these neighborhoods and that's the projects of the projects of the projects in New Orleans. And I'm like, yo, this shit just looks like a war zone. It's scary.
And it was a war zone. It was a war zone, but now, like I said, it's Magnolia Trace and Lafitte Landing.
Yeah.
And it's like.
And then they knock down these big, scary, like, for those of you who aren't really familiar with New Orleans, but are of age to remember the early 2000s, go back and watch Juvenile's video. That was shot
that was the
dead
project.
That was in the Calliope.
In the Jacks. In the Bricks, as we call them.
That shit looks mad scary. That same neighborhood now,
you wouldn't recognize
it. Was unrecognizable, right?
It is sad.
It is unrecognizable because, once again, but you know what's crazy, though? Beck mentioned something about white flight. And that's exactly what you said it as well. That's what people did when people of color made inroads to move into a nicer neighborhood, you know, buy a home in a neighborhood that they would feel proud to call home. White people looked around and went, oh no.
Yep. And that's part of the creation of suburbs.
Exactly right.
Perfect example of suburbs is we have three friends that lived in this neighborhood, and I'm gonna go ahead and shout the neighborhood out, Woodmere. Woodmere is in its sub. It's, I guess a suburb. That's considered suburbs.
It was.
Yeah. are nice single family homes, two car garage, nice big yards, two stories, and you would look at these houses like, damn, these some nice houses. That shit is just as hood, if not more hood, than the projects in New Orleans.
Because that's where people, but you said it, that's where people went. When the
and
projects
that's where they left, they flocked.
Like when the projects actually were torn down, people had nowhere to go. And then, especially after Hurricane Katrina, people who could afford to leave left. And then other people purchased these homes. But they didn't purchase them to live there. They purchased them as rental property. Mm-hmm.
Section 8, yep.
Exactly right. So it's like the biggest thing going right now is buy a property, put it on Section 8, let the government pay
I would have such, and that's the one thing, and this is my final thought just in general on this subject. There's me and another one of my good buddy old pals, call him Handyman. We both share this sentiment. I'm not sure if Ann does. My mama doesn't, surprisingly, and a few other people don't, is the mixed income housing. I have a huge problem with that, and that's not to knock anybody who's low income. But, okay, so the way mixed income works here, at least, is your rent is based on your income. Mm-hmm. So if I'm making $50,000 a year, my rent's going to be $1,600 a month for a one bedroom. If Ann's making $23,000 a year, her rent might be $700 for the same exact apartment. If Becky's on Section 8, she can live there and pay $12.
Yeah. Right. So that's not the only thing mixed income is about, though. Some people own and some people rent in a mixed income building, which a lot of people don't particularly care for because, and once again, not to down or try to denigrate my black and brown brothers and sisters, but there is a truth to what I'm about to say.
Niggas don't care.
Right. A lot of times we give no fucks if it does not belong to us, which is stupid because we still live in it.
Yep.
But because we do not own it, we do not take care of it. So you have people who own something, take pride in it, and they try to keep it in a certain manner.
Yep.
And sitting next to or living next to someone who is on Section 8, not own this thing, and as I said, gives no fucks about the way this thing looks.
Exactly.
Or what they do. And that's not everybody.
No. And
that is not everybody.
Just
but
the, what's it called? The dichotomy. I just wanted to say that word. K-Man, who we've talked about on the show multiple times, he's a friend of ours. He owns many properties. He rents to low income people. And he was telling us one of his tenants, a single mother with like five kids, and he's like, this is going to be fucking terrible. Just based on his experiences, these kids are going to tear my fucking house up. It's going to be dirty. The cleanest fucking tenant he's ever had. Like, this dude goes out of his way for this particular tenant. He don't want to lose her because of how clean. So, no, it's not all of us. But what I will say is if I'm paying $1,600 a month renting my apartment, my next door neighbor who has the same exact apartment as me better be paying the same. Because if they're paying $50, like, what? They don't have any incentive to follow the rules of the community. And I'm big on that. I'm big on community rules. We lived in a condo association that had strict, well, we lived in a condo that had an association that had very strict rules. I'm talking super strict.
Mm-hmm.
And Becky, what did I say? I said, I like it.
Yep.
And
he loved it.
I'm like, yo. And then for the first couple of years, it's like, I was reporting motherfuckers left and right. Becky, we was like, oh, report them. Because you
had
get fined.
Had the phone out, recorded the stuff,
yeah,
sent the videos
exactly.
in.
I was a snitch, y'all. I was a snitch.
Yes.
But they got fined because, one, either they owned right. and or they rented, and then the owner of that particular unit got a fine. So your tenants, they're going to stay in line, but then that whole place kind of collapsed.
And the management changed, and they didn't
give
they didn't
a fuck.
Care. You know, they didn't care to enforce the
exactly.
rules.
But if you're paying $50 a month for a $1,600 a month,
you're not going to care.
Yeah, who cares what
because
the rules
guess what?
Are?
I can move from here and go somewhere
exactly.
else and do the exact same thing. But so
I'm against
but,
that shit. That was my final thought. I'm against mixed income housing.
Let me see. I have mixed feelings about mixed income properties. And the reason is because, you can see the thought behind it. It's like, if you have people who actually are vested in this particular property, they're more apt to try to keep the other people in line. Or I think that's one of the reasons that they do this. So,
and it's like a show. It's like I don't want to use the term monkey see, monkey do, but it's almost like, okay, I see how these people are doing certain things.
Right.
Like,
so I am more apt to do, because right. you know, you're talking about the broken glass theory.
Right. Exactly.
In reverse.
Exactly.
Same. So I can understand the concept, but like I said, I have mixed feelings about that. But to wrap up, we talked about these archaic things that are still very prevalent in 2020. You know, started off top of the show talking about Virginia and how they still have these laws on the books while they may not be enforceable and they may be illegal because of federal law. They're still there. And, you know, it it has to do something to your psyche, I would think. You know, it has to do, because it does something to me to know that, even though I know the history of my country and I know what my country is presently doing and the people in my country and what they do, but you have to feel some kind of way to know that you live in a state and you pay taxes in that state and you're a law-abiding citizen in that state. And this state has for hundreds of years allowed something to stay in its laws that adversely affects you, you know, and for the state of Virginia to still have these laws. And it's not the only one. Louisiana has some as well that harken back to Jim Crow. And like I said, that has to do something to you psychologically, because it's like, even though you know that you're a part of something,
you're not equally a part of it.
Right, because these people constantly show you that you need to stay in your place. You know, this is the place where you are, and this is where you need to stay. And this is basically like our version of a burning cross. You know, this is our reminder to you that you are less than. And even federally, I was looking, just going through some of this stuff, I found this this article from 2016. So this was 4 years ago, but saying that this was 4 years ago, and this is when our country took notice and actually did something about some of these things. And it's the article talks about how Congress passed a bill to take out some of this archaic terminology that still existed in federal law, and terminology such as Oriental, which on this show, I've said it before, Oriental is not a person.
No,
it is a piece of furniture,
mm-hmm.
But Oriental was still in federal law, and Negro. And to it is, they give an example about a certain section of a law that referred to racial groups. And this is what it says. It says, a Negro, Puerto Rican, American Indian, Eskimo, Oriental, or Aleut, or is a Spanish-speaking individual of Spanish descent, right? And then they go on to talk about another bill that erased phrases like Negroes, Spanish speaking, Orientals, Indians, Eskimos, and Aleut. And it actually replaces it with things like Asian Americans and
niggas,
Native Hawaiians, Pacific Islanders, you know. But this is the crazy thing. And this
so
is the
wait,
part.
It just replaced it? It updated the language,
Updated the language, but
made it more PC.
Yes. But this is what was crazy to me as I was reading this. It said, according to the census graphic, the 1790 survey offered just three racial options for a household. So this was 1790.
And these black, white, other.
These were the three. Free white females and males, slaves, and all others.
Oh, damn. My gosh.
Yes. So
I would have been a free white female because I self-identify as. Right. Yo, imagine trying that shit back then. I self-identify.
No, hold on. Here you go. As a free white man.
I self-identify as a free white woman.
Yes.
Man, get the
so,
fuck.
So, yes. Free white females and males, slaves, and all other free persons. So by 1850, the categories were black, mulatto, or white.
Wait, so they actually, in what year was this?
1850.
They actually used the term black in 1850?
Oh yeah. Black, mulatto, or white. That's what you were. You were either black, mulatto, or white.
I'm surprised about
just,
that.
Just to let you know. So this is the one. So 1960s is when Indians showed up, not Native Americans, but Indians.
Redskins.
Yeah, that's the same year that Chinese appears as well. And anybody who could trace their ancestry to India, they didn't have an option until 1920. And then it wasn't even Indian or anything like that. It was Hindu, which is
a religious
affiliation, right? Now, Latinos had nothing until 1930. And guess what it was?
Mexican.
God. Exactly right. So what was crazy was after 1930s, every census after that did not even have Mexican or anything Hispanic. They didn't show up again until 1970. So this actually, when I was reading this, you think about it, this actually tells you more about the way
the government looks at its own people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The government looks at black and brown people or people of color, period. Anything other than Caucasian people.
Right.
This is great insight into what our government thinks about us.
See? And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
I have a final note.
Okay. All right, final note.
For those of you who actually want to get a different perspective other than listening to this podcast, there was actually a movie about this kind of situation, about the housing situation.
Are they paying us?
Man, put it out that back. Put it out
Come
that
on
back.
Now.
Go
put
ahead.
It out
Go
that
ahead.
Back.
The movie is called The Color of Courage. It was done in 1998. It stars Lynn Whitfield.
All right.
And Linda
that's
Hamilton.
Fake Angela Bassett. Okay.
It's yeah. not.
And it is set in the 1940s and is inspired by the civil rights case Sipes v. McGee.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on to explain and describe and depict the concerns that we address today in today's topic.
Okay.
So
check it
just
out.
Just you know, a thought.
The color of coverage.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode brought to you by The Color of Courage and Dave Thomas's bitch ass.
Man, look.
My name is Dan.
No, brought to you by the Vanilla Frosty. Thank
That's
you.
That's right, Vanilla. Uh-huh. This black law, everything black. Black on black on black over
Whatever.
Here, son.
Whatever.
Dipping in that white coffee. That didn't make no sense. My name is Dan. Keep up with me on Twitter and IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. The show on all social media platforms at Black Law Podcast. Shoot us some emails. Shoot us some messages. Let us know what you want to hear from us.
Cool. And I am Ann, just Ann. And you just can follow me. You can follow me at I Tell Legal Lies on Twitter. Beck?
That's me. You got my name right. Afro Becky.
RTB.
Yeah, that's me.
Come show me your titties.
No.
Okay.
Oh, Lord. Thank you.
I was just trying to see if you had a brawl.
Shut up. Appreciate y'all.
Peace.